Well, hello there.
Hey, Maddie. So good to
Hey.
see you. How are you?
Too. I'm good. So you notice these very fetching glasses that I'm wearing today?
I
So
do.
they're actually, I hate them. So I have a
No.
sty on my eye. I know this is a gross way to start the conversation, but I have a sty, which I've never had before. And apparently they just go away by themselves, but my eye is all disgusting and swollen. So I'm
No, well,
wearing
I
my
can't
glasses.
see it at all. I just thought you were doing like a fashionable with your cool color sweater and your cool glasses. Oh,
Yeah,
I'm
well, so
sorry.
these glasses I hate because they're progressives and I literally can't see through them because I'm not used to it. Like, yes, that's how old I am, is I need progressive lenses. So, but meanwhile, I've been wearing them for 2 days now and I'm starting to get used to them and
Oh
I'm
man.
trying to feel like they're not as ugly as I think they are.
Well, from here, I love them. I don't know, to each their own. I guess we have all of our preferences. But when I first saw you, I thought, I was like, oh, those are so cool. I should get myself a pair.
Okay, so now I feel better.
They're great.
Anyway, so we have an awesome topic this week to talk about, don't we?
Yeah,
So
we do.
let's just introduce ourselves first to anybody who might be joining. So I am Maddie Grant. I'm a culture designer and digital strategist. My company is called Propel. And Sonia and I have this show every Tuesday where we talk about all kinds of topics related to workplace culture and work-life balance and everything work at life. Get it? So, Sonia, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm Sonia. I'm an organizational psychologist. I'm also president of our workforce business unit at Question Pro. And as Maddie was saying, we're just really passionate about so many different topics that are impacting the workplace and impacting our entire lives these days. And today, talking about a really, really important topic. I think it's always been important. It's incredibly important now, and it's about mental wellness or mental well-being. So really glad to have a little bit of time to, I think it's almost, we'll only have enough time to start the discussion because there's so much to be said, there's so much to be learned about it. But in all of our research and gathering ideas, this has been something that's bubbled up. And so I think we're in many ways fortunate to have this platform to be able to start to discuss this because it's unfortunate that the pandemic is what actually caused this to be talked about more and come to the forefront. But this is certainly not a topic that's going to go away with the pandemic. It's not that, hey, we're going to get vaccinated or not, and all of a sudden COVID will go away and everybody's just going to be thrilled at the workplace, no issues. That's certainly not true. So I think that it's a great launching pad for organizations to really take a step back and start to think about the best way to support their workforce. So, big topic for today.
Yes. So we like to start every show with a data point or several. So here's
So, in the end, we'll share some external studies too, because we actually found several really good ones. But we like, because we have this nice fortune of being able to do quick polls through our Question Pro Slack integration. And so before every show, we always go out and ask a few hundred people the topic of the week. And so the first question that we asked is how many people felt that their employer actually provides sufficient mental well-being management? And what we found is that one out of three people said that they feel like their employer doesn't provide that. And what was actually interesting is this, it wasn't a long tail or wasn't even a bell curve, but there's this slight hike in the not at alls. So there are some organizations that seem to be really doing a good job and understood the importance. And then we see this opposite end of the spectrum where organizations are just maybe not even thinking about it yet. Maybe they feel like I'm dealing with some of these more urgent issues and this is not urgent, but we're hoping that for anybody listening today, we have an opportunity to change your mind because it is something that's so incredibly critical today.
Yeah, and this is super encouraging that 67% are at least doing something. And also what that means is that there are examples out there just,
Yes.
on the internet through Google of companies and what they're doing. And we'll share some of those in the resources afterwards.
Yeah.
But if you work for a workplace that's not doing anything, you know, you can do some searching around and show that, you know, other companies, even in your sector, doing similar things that your company does is probably, you know, experimenting with some services.
Yeah.
So that's definitely encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what was really interesting to me when I was doing the research is that it goes a wide spectrum. And sometimes when you look at the words mental well-being, it feels heavy. It feels like it's something so big. And it feels like, oh, how do I embark on this? What do I do? But there are some, I don't want to say transactional, but some lower hanging fruit that organizations can do that doesn't have to be this huge investment right away, that there's certainly a stepping platform to doing something bigger. But what was also interesting, another question that we asked as a part of understanding this topic better, is also we asked people who they would turn to if they felt that their mental being was being impacted by work, right? So this is specifically being impacted by work, and almost 40% of people said that it would be somebody outside of the office. So this is also not, it shows an indication that it's not just about necessarily the formal programs that organizations offer, but also about the culture and how people are connecting and how open individuals are talking about it. And to me, it was interesting because here it only, you know, it says 11% of coworkers, 17% no one. Like that just gives me goosebumps in the worst kind of way because, you know, you think about it, there's still this huge difference in how many people, not everybody, but how many people perceive physical well-being and mental well-being. And when you're physically not feeling well, it's of course common to go see a doctor, and it's, you know, you physically see it, like you have a runny nose and you have a cough. And a lot of times, you know, when you go into the work, somebody might say like, oh, please go home, you know, don't spread your germs here. But mental challenges oftentimes are not as physically obvious. So it's not as easy even for somebody to proactively say like, hey, like, are you feeling okay? Sometimes until it gets really bad. And I think to me, I actually have a personal story around this. So around the beginning of the pandemic, I remember, you know, everybody was really like freaked out around COVID symptoms. And, you know, I grew up with asthma, luckily, you know, in my adult life, I'm okay. But I still had it, especially as a spouse and as a mom and as a daughter. I'm like, I need to stay healthy for everybody, you know? And so it gave me an increased level of worry. And I remember feeling like a little difficult to breathe at one point. And I remember actually talking to a coworker, a good friend of mine that also used to, you know, happen to be on my team in my previous job. And I remember telling her like, you know, I don't know, like it's, I have my sense of smell, I have my sense of taste, but it's weird. And she said, Sonia, have you ever had anxiety? And I was like, no, I don't think so. And she said, I think that might be it. And I thought, oh my, like I had no idea because I'd never experienced it before, but you have now this like whole combination of different factors that are going on. And I was so glad to have had that conversation with her because just in that, she was able to reassure me. She was able to share some tips. It was this area that to me, even as a psychologist, I've never personally experienced it. And when I started to, I didn't know what it was. So when I look at the coworker, the tiny little sliver that's so little, and in some of the ways that people could even help us if we casually open up in those conversations is really huge. So that was just, again, I like to sometimes share personal stories because I think if we've learned anything from last year is that being vulnerable can be really important for people to take a step back and look at themselves internally too. So to me, again, it was how hugely that relationship with my colleague and the fact that I was able to be open helped me because I was able to understand what was going on with me so much more quickly than if that conversation hadn't happened.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think we talked about this topic probably more than once in the last couple of shows, but the idea that if you're a leader in your organization, you can model this, you know, you can be vulnerable, you can share that you're stressed out or that you're anxious or, you know, whatever it might be, and just show that it's okay to talk about it. And I did notice in one of the resources that we'll share, there's some tips around how to talk about this stuff with your colleagues or your HR department or your manager or your CEO, like whoever, at work. Yeah. And some of the recommendations are around, you don't have to share everything.
No.
You know, you can give an indication that you need a little bit of support without necessarily having to share all of the details of every single thing that you're feeling. So that was a useful reminder.
So I know I see some more people coming in. I know we're about halfway through, so just wanted to quickly pause and reintroduce our topic. Thank you for all of you that are with us. Thank you for all of you that just joined. Maddie and I are taking some time today to talk about a really important topic of mental well-being. We shared some data around how many people feel that their organizations provide sufficient support around well-being. We were pleasantly surprised that 2/3 do. We think that there's a tremendous opportunity for the other third to provide some more resources or provide any resources to their employees. And we'll talk about now next some of those ideas. And we also talked about the work dynamics and culture and organizations and how many people that even feel like they're feeling mental strain or risk to their mental well-being as a result of work, that nearly 40% of people actually would first speak with somebody outside of the office rather than one of their colleagues. And just talking about the culture, creating organizational cultures where people feel comfortable sharing these kinds of things with their colleagues, with their leaders, with their HR team, to really be able to get the most effective support in the workplace as well, not just have to seek for it outside. So that's our quick recap of where we are right now. And I think with the remainder of the time, Maddie, you started to talk about some of the resources. And as usual here, we included just a few. Again, as we researched this topic, we were pleasantly, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but
encouraged.
Yes, thank you. That's better. At the amount of information that was available. And it was interesting. Like, so my other real life example is I just came back from a management meeting at Question Pro. And we did an internal survey on well-being with our employees. And a lot of people said that they were finding a really hard time unplugging. They were finding a hard time unplugging during the work week. And then they were also finding a hard time taking time off when they needed to. And so we had at least an hour long discussion, because we are a global organization, around what can we do, what can we implement for our employees to make sure everybody feels like they can take that break when they need to, but then also how do we monitor that? Because what we started to realize is that in a lot of our regions, we have leave policies or vacation or PTO policies, but it's the idea that maybe people feel like they have too much work. And I talk with my good friend Al Adamson a lot about capacity. He brings that up a lot. And so I mentioned that it's, you know, the idea of it's maybe not about taking time off only, but do I feel like I have so much work to do that when am I going to do it? If I take this day off, am I going to fall behind? Can I really enjoy myself? Or am I just going to be anxious because I feel like I'll come back to even more work? So we're going to continue. We're going to announce in our global meeting on Thursday some of the new actions that we're going to take, but then we're going to check in with people to see what are some of the obstacles they might be facing in being to take this time off. Because then again, it could be a capacity issue, it could be a leadership issue. There are many different things, and we just want to make sure that we're creating that culture and atmosphere to try to avoid burnout, to make sure that people don't get to the point where they really feel like their mental well-being is at risk. And we see that, you know, as a society, we're walking that dangerous line now, and people are feeling bad much more than ever before. So it's really critical to be much more proactive than ever before around that.
Yeah, and one of the really sort of silver linings of the pandemic, right, is that probably all organizations realize that you can work in a flexible way and still get your job done. You know, it's a horrible way to find that out, you know, after companies have been so reluctant, you know, for so many years and decades to allow people to work more flexibly. But I've seen myself just a lot more openness towards people taking a mental health day, you know, randomly in the middle of the week if they need to, because we know that we're all working longer hours. And, you know, we talked about this at another show as well. But, you know, we're working longer hours. We work weekends. We work in between feeding the kids and taking the dog for a walk. So carving out space for employees to just take an hour. It doesn't have to be take a day, but take an hour, take an afternoon to just de-stress sometimes is actually more and more seen as just a valuable part of your working experience. And it makes your work better if you're allowed to do that. If there's no stigma around that.
Well, one interesting thing going off what you were saying too, that I was thinking about yesterday is, again, like going back to that idea of capacity, is also one thing to be careful about, because I think like as an employer, somebody could say, okay, well, you're working from home, so you don't have the commute, you know, you have more flexibility. So maybe your capacity actually grew. And then you're with your family and they're saying, well, you don't have a commute, you're at home. Yeah. So maybe your capacity grew. But the truth is we still have the same amount of capacity. We're just maybe physically somewhere else and we're moving our time differently. So that's also important, I think, for individuals to think about and do a check on their own of what people's expectations are, because the pie didn't grow, the pie shifted. But how much output we can have is the same, or it could potentially be lower because of all the stats that we're seeing on how big of a strain this has had on our mental well-being, like globally. Mm-hmm. You know, everywhere in the world, some people are maybe struggling more than others. Some have more challenges than others. It's by no means equal. But I think you find probably very few people are saying, I feel much better during the pandemic. Like things are easier. I mean, like there are some, but I think it's just so important to be conscious of those expectations of where like things shifted, but the pie didn't necessarily grow thinking about what somebody can do.
And most of us work in groups, right? So groups or teams or, you know, task forces or departments. So even if you, the individual, actually loves working from home, and like I love working from home, you know, I love not having to commute anywhere. But I've turned into a complete hermit and I basically don't leave the house. So. I do all my socializing on the internet. But anyway,
me too, mostly.
You know, you're that kind of person who is actually really enjoying just being at home. There's so many other people in your team, in your department, who might be the opposite. It might depend on the ages of your kids. I have teenagers, they can feed themselves, you know. Sonia has a toddler.
He will probably like to eat his toys if we don't watch him for too long.
Exactly. But I think it's really incumbent on organizations to take the lead on some of this. Even if you don't have a full-on, you know, mental wellness program, whatever that might look like, you could share that, you know, here's what you do if you're feeling stress. Here's who you talk to in HR. If you don't have an HR department, talk to me, the CEO, you know, like there's always something that can be done. You could be looking at your health insurance benefits that's provided and make sure that if there are, you know, mental health services included, that you just let your employees know that their insurance has that. I mean, you know, there's lots of examples of how to do this, but I hope that there's a little bit less of the stigma around talking about the fact that people, you know, can be affected by stress and mental health issues.
Yeah, I think it's almost just better to assume everybody will be affected by it. And it's a different level of a spectrum. And that's one thing we were talking about in the leadership meeting when we were talking about these different strategies, whether it was time off or providing resources, is that at this point in time, as a leadership team, we need to be more proactive. We need to say, hey, you're going to have a mental health day, but like you need to take it like this week. You pick a day and just to make sure people know that we're serious about it or any of these resources, like create a specific space for it. Because a lot of times as people get used to things, if we feel like it's important and we see the value, but we know that people still might not be comfortable, why make them raise their hand? like don't. Just create a place where they can proactively go. If you're surveying your workforce and they're telling you that they're burning out, they're telling you they feel like they can't take time off, give them a space to do it, because then they don't have to make a decision. They don't have to say, but I have a client. No. This day we're taking off, or we're taking a half day, and it's just what it is. So I think that until it becomes a little more normal, like any change in opinion, any change of behavior in a habit, that's where organizations, if they're more proactive, can make a tremendous difference in how this gets adopted. And that's why, like, that would be my recommendation to anybody listening that has the ability to influence this, is push it. Make it visible, make it significant. Don't wait yet for people to come to you. Hopefully they will. But what we saw in our data is that a lot of people still don't feel that level of comfort. They'll still go outside of the organization more so than internally. But we're also seeing in the data that people really need that support.
Yeah, exactly. So look at that. We're right on time.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like there's so much more. So we included a couple of resources here. There are different applications. I actually saw recently one application called Fika from one of my former colleagues that was really interesting. And it was a mental fitness app where you train your mind like you would train a muscle. And it has different trainers and different things. So there are a lot of different apps available, workshops that can be done. I really love the MetLife report. Thank you, Casey, so much for sharing that. I was reading it last night. I mean, the data in it is incredible, the insights. So we included just a few articles and resources here. Again, such a big topic. If anybody that's here, and we're seeing some recommendations and comments, and I think we won't be able to get to all of them because of the time, but please reach out to us. This seems like a significant enough topic too that we can maybe do a follow-up episode on this, just because we are so passionate about it. But
yeah, definitely we should do that. More to talk about. And we could dig into some of the specifics that certain companies, maybe MetLife, are doing.
Yeah.
Look at those things.
Absolutely. Awesome. So as always, as we wrap up, we have our colleague show. I think we'll post it in the comments, but we have Live with Dan on Fridays, where he talks about different research methodologies, CX on Tuesdays with our colleague Ken. So we are really trying to be proactive with these kinds of shows to share knowledge as a community. I think the more we help each other, the better we're going to get. So those are just a few programs that we're running. And Maddie and I will be back next Tuesday, same time, same place. So thank you so much, everybody that joined us. Again, incredibly important topic. Thank you for listening. It's really encouraging to see how many people tuned in. I think it makes us even much more hopeful that we'll start to see some significant impact over time and how we evolve in this area.
Yeah, exactly. Bye.
Bye, everybody. See you next week. Thank you.